This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The United States, United Nations and rights groups have been calling for sincere dialogue between authorities and the rebels to try to resolve the deadly conflict.
That's Moki Edwin Kenzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Details next. Also, the Sudanese opposition coalition has called for more protests after Sunday's killings. And in Nigeria, as many as 50 people died today when fuel from a crashed tanker truck caught fire. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a United States congressional delegation visiting Cameroon has called for unconditional talks between the government and rebels on the country's separatist conflict. The two-year struggle in which Cameroon's English-speaking western regions have fought to separate from the French-speaking government has killed close to 2,000 people and displaced hundreds of thousands. But the government says it will not engage in any talks with the rebels that include the issue of separation from Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
California Congresswoman Karine Bass told journalists in Cameroon late Monday that the government and rebels should respect human rights, end all violence, and begin talks on the separatist conflict.
We especially want to see a peaceful dialogue, a peaceful resolution. Without conditions, we want to see all sides come to the table. We recently passed a resolution in Congress saying this, and we wanted to come and see firsthand what is happening in the country.
Bass made the comments after meeting with refugees and displaced people from the conflict in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions, as well as government ministers. She is leading a 7-member congressional delegation to Cameroon with a focus on health and human rights issues. On Tuesday, the U.S. delegation is scheduled to meet with Cameroon activists and rights groups. The United States, United Nations, and rights groups have been calling for sincere dialogue between authorities and the rebels to try to resolve the deadly conflict. Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says they are not against talks in principle, but he stresses that President Paul Biya has made it clear that splitting the country is off the table.
At a time when Cameroon is resolutely moving towards its emergence, everything must and will be done to preserve peace and stability. Cameroon is and remains a rule of law.
International observers and rights groups say Cameroon's separatist conflict is getting worse by the day. The United Nations says at least 1,800 people have been killed and more than 500,000 displaced in the 2 years since fighting began. Cameroon aid workers in June said they feared travel to the region after suspected rebels attacked and burned several truckloads of aid. Congresswoman Bass says humanitarian needs are increasing in both the English-speaking western regions and in Cameroon's north due to the Islamist militant group Boko Haram.
We're concerned about humanitarian aid in the far north as well as in the northwest and southwest, making sure that there is access to aid, that the people that provide humanitarian assistance are able to provide that freely and fully to the population.
The U.S. Congress, in a May resolution, condemned abuses by Cameroon's security forces and armed groups. The abuses included extrajudicial killings and detentions, the use of force against civilians and protesters, and violations on the freedoms of press, expression, and assembly. The congressional resolution called on Cameroon's military and rebels to cease the abuse. use of child soldiers, torture and kidnapping, and attacks on schools and teachers. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In Nigeria, as many as 50 people died today when fuel from a crashed tanker caught fire in Benue State, officials say. The victims reportedly were collecting fuel from the disabled truck in Benue State when it caught fire late yesterday. A state government official said many people were injured in the fire and taken to a hospital. Incidents like this are relatively common in Nigeria, which is a major oil producer. Last October, 60 people died when oil leaking from a broken pipeline caught fire. A UN special investigator warns that an exodus from Eritrea will continue if the human rights situation in the country does not improve and the government fails to implement the reforms guaranteeing basic freedoms. The investigator submitted her first annual report to the UN Human Rights Council today. Lisa Schlein reports from the conference site in Geneva.
UN Special Rapporteur Daniele Kravitz welcomes the strengthening of ties between Eritrea and Ethiopia since the country signed a joint declaration of peace and friendship 1 year ago. Despite those positive developments, she says there have been no tangible improvements in the human rights situation in the country.
The dividends of peace are not yet benefiting ordinary Eritreans, nor are there any signs to suggest they will. As a result, hundreds continue to flee the country every month.
Kravitz notes that national service remains one of the main drivers of migration from Eritrea. The government introduced compulsory military service for everyone ages 18 to 50 for a period of 18 months. She says in reality, people are trapped in a system of indefinite military conscription, forcing thousands to flee the country. The UN rapporteur is urging the government to reform the national service, demobilize recruits, and create jobs. She expresses great concern about the continued use of indefinite and arbitrary detention and enforced disappearance without any recourse to justice.
One example is that of Siham Ali Abdul, a dual Eritrean-American national, who was arrested when she was only 15 years old as she tried to flee the country without an exit visa in December 2012. This past April, she turned 22. Siham remains in custody and her whereabouts are not known.
Kravitz is calling for the release of all political prisoners and for Eritrea to uphold and strengthen the rule of law and justice. Ambassador Tesfamikael Geratu from Eritrea's Ministry of Foreign Affairs did not appreciate what he called interference in his country's sovereign rights. He accused the UN Human Rights Council of targeting his country over the past 8 years with unwarranted resolutions and special mandates on trumped-up charges of a human rights crisis. He said the objective of the special rapporteur's mandate was to vilify, isolate, and destabilize Eritrea and further complicate regional peace, security, and development. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Sudanese opposition coalition has called for more protests after Sunday's deadly protests. The opposition says Sudan's transitional military council should be held responsible for the deaths of 10 protesters reportedly killed by security forces Sunday. The government blames the protesters for the deaths. The exact number cannot be independently confirmed. Journalist Michael Atit is in Khartoum and reports that opposition representatives are calling on citizens to hold mass protests for the next 2 weeks. They are to be followed by 2 days of civil disobedience, July 13th and 14th. Also today, officials in the United Arab Emirates urged the military council, which replaced President Omar al-Bashir in April, to continue to hold a dialogue with the protesters. The UAE foreign minister urged both sides to avoid violence. The protesters are demanding a civilian government. War in the Libyan capital has been going on since early April, displacing 80,000 people. Among them are families from Sudan, Eritrea, and other countries. They fled extreme violence at home, only to be forced to flee again in Libya. VOA's Heather Murdoch has this report from Tripoli in part one of a series.
Since early April, forces based in eastern Libya have been battling the forces of the country's western capital, Tripoli, and civilians have been fleeing their homes. Among them is Nafisa from Sudan, who now lives in a schoolhouse fashioned into a displacement camp. She arrived in Tripoli a week before the battle began, but this is her fourth time escaping violence. Nafisa says she was in Sudan's Darfur region in 2003 when Janjaweed soldiers burned down her village and set fire to her husband, sons, and neighbors while they were still alive. Only she and one son, Tayyib, survived. First, she fled to another village, then to a massive camp that is notoriously violent. Finally, she braved the dangerous road from Sudan to Libya. Her surviving son was kidnapped and tortured along the way. They made it to Tripoli in March, when the city was at peace, and found a suburban apartment. But 1 week later, the battle began, and Nafisa and Tayyib were forced to run from the bombing. Nafisa says she doesn't want to wait out the war here and hopes to go to Europe. The International Organization for Migration says 550 people have been killed crossing the Mediterranean Sea to Europe so far this year, and that number is expected to grow to the thousands by the end of the year. Even if they survive, they risk capture and arrest. Nafisa says she cannot go back to Sudan or stay in Tripoli. Like other people here, she says she has little to lose and will risk it all for the chance of safety. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Tripoli.
18 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. In 2013, blogger Mohamed Ould Sheikh Mahathir was arrested in Mauritania and sentenced to death on charges of blasphemy. As VOA's Isha Sarai reports, a court commuted his sentence 2 years ago, but he remains behind bars at an undisclosed location.
In 2017, a Mauritanian court commuted Mahathir's sentence to 2 years, which he had already served, legally liberating him. However, he has remained in detention, his whereabouts unknown. Fatimata Mbaye, Mahathir's lawyer, says that she considers him legally free and arbitrarily detained since November of 2017. Mbaye says that his detention is arbitrary in the sense that he has not been able to contact his family or meet with his lawyer since the last court decision. Mahathir was arrested 6 years ago after a blog post where he condemned the use of religion to justify racial discrimination. Numerous human rights organizations have called on President Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz, who is due to step down in the coming months, to release him. But Arnaud Froger, head of the Africa desk at Reporters Without Borders, says his case is indicative of declining press freedom in the Sahara Desert country.
This case of Mohamed Mahathir in Mauritania is very much symbolic of what's happening in Mauritania as far as press freedom is going. The country is ranked 94 as a press freedom index and registered a very huge drop of 20 places in the last index, mainly because of the outgoing president didn't release Mohamed Mahathir.
Mahathir's first trial in 2013 sparked protests by Islamists in the capital calling for his death. Since his legal release in 2017, the president has argued that Mahathir must be kept in detention for his own safety and for the safety of the Mauritanian people. Baye says the president has told lawyers that Mahathir's release would be a threat to the stability of the country, a claim she cannot understand.
That you keep a blogger behind bars to ensure his own safety and the safety of Mauritanian is both outrageous and false. That the pressure put by Islamists on this case cannot justify to keep someone in detention, no matter court's decision.
Incoming President Mohamed Ould Ghazouani has said nothing about Mahathir's case. During Abdelaziz's last remaining months in office, Mahathir's lawyers and rights workers are renewing their efforts to push for his release. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Nouakchott.
In Malawi, a young albino man is using music to fight discrimination and misconceptions about the genetic condition in a country where more than 100 people with albinism have been attacked since 2014. Lazarus Chigwandili has long been performing on the streets of Lilongwe, but after catching the eye of a Swedish producer, he began work on an album that is due out in August. He's also about to embark on a tour to promote a documentary produced by American pop star Madonna about the plight of albinos in Malawi. Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
As teens, Lazarus Chigwandali and his brother, who also had albinism, played on the streets of Lilongwe, mostly to raise money to buy protective skin lotion. He says in those days, it was difficult to find skin lotion that would protect them from the sun, so they had sores all over their bodies. As a result, many people were discriminated against them because of the way their bodies looked. Discrimination and attacks against albinos like Chigwandali continue. Some Africans believe their body parts used in so-called magic potions will bring good luck. At 39, Chigwandali began composing songs about the myths and misconceptions about people with albinism. Then he heard music producers from abroad wanted to meet him at his home village to record his music, something that worried wife Gertrude Leveson. She says she was still afraid that maybe they wanted to kidnap them all, but she realized that it was a peaceful move when she heard her husband talking with a friend of his on the phone. The recording deal enabled Chigwandali to produce a 30-track music album, Stomp on the Devil, which denounces attacks on albinos. Esa Umamaya is Chigwandali's manager.
With the challenges that people with albinism are going through in Malawi, we felt like his powerful voice can be an instrument to send the message across the world that, you know, people born with albinism are just like anybody else.
While some of his songs are playing on the local radio stations, Chigwandali says there's still a long way to go before the attacks end. He says there are still others who ignore the messages in his songs. This means a lot of work. But he says we will soon start a nationwide tour to screen my documentary, which shows attacks on people with albinism in Malawi. But his wife worries that Chigwandali's fame could expose him and their two albino sons to potential attackers. To ease their concerns, Chigwandali's managers have launched a fundraising initiative to build a house for the family that will provide greater security. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
Zimbabwe's Auditor General has found extensive corruption within the ZANU-PF government. Adigando in Bulawayo has the story.
The Auditor General's 2018 annual report chronicles malfeasance and misfeasance in many state institutions. In the latest report, the Auditor's Office says that many agencies fail to do proper accounting and record keeping, failing to maintain cash books and ledgers to record revenue and expenditure. They also do not keep fuel and motor registers. In certain instances, goods and services were paid for, but apparently not delivered. For example, Zimbabwe Electricity Transmission and Distribution Company, ZETDC, has not taken delivery of transformers 9 years after paying US $4.9 to a company called Pito Investment. The Zimbabwe Power Company in 2016 paid the same contractor almost US $562,000 for transformers, but they were never delivered. Political observers say the report reflects a culture of corruption in the government. Thomas Dole, a political analyst.
It speaks really to the modus operandi of the state institutions in this country. And it explains why taxpayers, at the end of the day, are impoverished. Yet these reports are gathering dust in these high-level offices. And these people are not stopping. Why they're not stopping is because there are no punitive measures that are visited upon them should they commit such gross violations of economic sabotage.
The Auditor General's report covers ministries, state-owned enterprises, and local government. It includes comments from those in charge of state institutions. The latest report, which the Minister of Finance presented to Parliament, exposes massive government corruption underpinned by shambolic accounting bordering on what the Auditor General Midre Chiri says is criminal activity. As much as US $2.4 billion of public funds may have been lost through poor standards and theft. Proctor Nyemba, a forensic crime expert with the Association of Forensic Practitioners, weighs in on the Auditor General's report.
The government has used billions of dollars in forensic audits, but there's not even a criminal near going to court, even convicted. So the question is, are we the forensic auditors? Are we the ones who are wrong, the forensic practitioners? Or is it the police who's wrong? Or is it the criminal justice who's wrong? Or is the attorney at the top, which is not instructing us to make sure that these criminals are convicted?
Analyst Stolle says that although the ZANU-PF youth wing has recently named party leaders it says are involved in corruption, he thinks the ruling party is all about political theater.
The evidence is overwhelming. What I think is problematic with ZANU-PF way of fighting corruption or this way of claiming to fight corruption is that they want to use it as an instrument to fight internal fictional obstacles.
The report includes a list of problems across many sectors, including some local authorities, local government authorities controlled by the opposition MDC. Another example is the Grain Marketing Board, which last week the government said is the only legal organization to buy maize in the country. The Auditor General says the board paid over US $1 million in 2016 for maize that was never delivered. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up!